1. Belva Lockwood.
I think it is fitting to speak tonight about another woman I greatly admire, a woman of courage who would not be put down, a woman who in 1879 made the U.S. Supreme Court change its ways. Her name, Belva Ann Lockwood, her year of birth, 1830. Lockwood was the first woman ever to gain admission to the Supreme Court bar, the first woman to argue a case before the court, and the first woman to run the full course for President of the United States. She was not born to wealth or social advantage. She grew up in a farm family from Niagara County, New York, widowed and with a child at the age of 22, after only 4 years of marriage. She enrolled in college and gained the training she needed to become a high school teacher and later a principal. She moved to the District of Columbia in 1866, and she remarried 2 years later. And once she was settled in the nation's capital, she began her career on behalf of the advancement of women. She was an armed suffragist, an advocate for widening employment opportunities for women. And in that connection, she embarked on her long-held ambition to become a lawyer. And that was no easy achievement in days when women were not welcomed at the bar. Her front-runner status was gained by unflagging effort. In 1869, when she was in a mother of two and 39 years old, Lockwood applied for admission to one of the D.C. area law schools. Her application was rejected on the ground familiar in those not so good old days. Her presence, she was told, would distract the attention of the young men in the class. Well, Lockwood persevered, and she was finally admitted to National University Law School, that is today George Washington University Law School. But she encountered another impediment when she completed the course of legal studies. The school refused to give her a degree, and the reason again was men in the class graduating with a woman, they feared, would lessen the value of their diplomas. So to overcome that roadblock, Lockwood wrote to President Ulysses S. Grant, who was president ex officio of the university. She wasted no words. I have passed through the curriculum of study and demand my diploma. Well, although the president did not directly reply to that letter, 2 weeks later, in September 1873, the chancellor of the university presented Lockwood with her law degree. In 1876, having practiced law in the district for 3 years, Lockwood met the necessary experience qualifications and she sought admission to the U.S. Supreme Court bar. The court denied her application, 6-3, with this terse explanation. by the uniform practice of the court, and by the fair construction of its rules, none but men are permitted to appear before it as attorneys and counsels. Undaunted, Lockwood relentlessly lobbied Congress to grant her plea. She succeeded less than 3 years later. In February 1879, Congress passed a law saying any woman presenting the necessary qualifications shall, on motion, be admitted to practice before the Supreme Court. Lockwood's case to me illustrates that sometimes productive dialogue the court can have with Congress. And it shows, too, that sometimes Congress is more in tune with changing times than the court is. My most recent case in point, Lily Ledbetter's, the court said 5-4 that Ledbetter had sued too late. She had been discriminated against for so many years, she waited just too long to complain about it. I dissented, saying the court had gotten it wrong and Congress should fix it, which Congress did in record time, passing the first measure President Obama signed when he took office, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act.
Displayed in space occupied by the law clerks. A replica
replica of that Voci denying Bella Lockwood admission to the court. And next to it, there's one of several cartoons that were published during her 1884 run for the presidency against Cleveland and Plano. Not at all a flattering cartoon. But she was never intimidated by slights or detractors. And to the end of her life in 1917, she remained an unflappable optimist. Well, so much has changed for the better since Bella Lockwood's years in law practice. Admission ceremonies at the court nowadays include women in sizable numbers, and it is no longer, of course, a special note when counsel for both sides is a woman. Women today serve as presidents of leading universities and bar associations, and law school deans, federal judges, state high court judges, elected representatives on the local, state, and federal level, and in high executive positions. Women are currently 1/3 of the membership of the Supreme Court. When people ask me, well, when do you think it'll be enough? My answer is, when there are none. With no artificial barriers blocking their way.